The morning chanting we have done, so we will do some reflection. Okay, turn to your retreat chanting book. We do some reflection on the universal well-being. Page 22. Oh, sorry. We might as well do the sharing of blessing first. Page 21. This one is very good. Reflection on sharing of blessing with all our loved ones, spiritual teacher, guides of great virtue, mother, father, and relatives, etc. Okay, turn to page 21. Reflection and sharing of blessings. Ready? Okay, Amy, get the mic. Yeah. Page 21, Retreat Chanting Book, Reflection on Sharing of Blessings. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
To the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all various leaders of the world, may the highest God and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through the act of sharing, may all desires and attachments and all harmful states of mind quickly cease until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion nor take hold nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all this, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Okay, then we do another one. So the five daily contemplation on page 27. This body of mine is of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. This body of mine is of the nature to be sick. I have not gone beyond sickness and disease. This body of mine is of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond death. All that is my beloved and pleasing will become otherwise, will become separated from me. I am the owner of my karma, heir karma, born of my karma, related to my karma, abide and supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, for good or for ill, for that I will be the heir. Thus we shall frequently recollect daily.
So this daily recollection is very important. It stressed to us the importance of karma, because almost everything, like I always said, 99.999% of whatever happened to the individual is related to your karma. Then, if you may recall, there is quite a famous, I think, Hokkien dialect song, Ai Pia Jia E Ia, you remember? They always say, Sa Hun Ti Zhu Tia. That is wrong. In fact, Kao Hun Ti Zhu Tia. Only 10% Ko Pa Pia. If you don't have the karma, you Pa Pia, even how also no use when I tell you. You must have the karmic inheritance first. But never mind. With the guy who composed the song, didn't understand. He thought with hard work, he can change his life destiny. So he said only 30% the heaven decide, or Ti Zhu Tia. Then he thought the balance of 70% Ko Pa Pia, he can make it. Then he said Pa Pia Jia E Ia. So for them, that Pa Pia is to win worldly thing, not the spiritual path, not the wisdom. If it's wisdom, in fact 90% Ti Zhu Tia already. That one that can be changed is very little. But it when it comes to sports and all those things, yes. The training, all those things may make you excel. But most of it, 90% also destined from the past already. You are gifted, then you train hard, you can make it. If you are not gifted, how hard you train also, same result. You cannot means you cannot. Okay? Then we do the last one. Turn to page 35. The discourse. Oh, sorry, that is the first sermon, not that one. I want you to go through the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Page 40-something, 43, yes. So this one, the Buddha explained it in a slightly different manner. But what I taught you one is easier to understand. Regarding the five aggregate of form and mind, I already told you, if you reflect, you contemplate, you will know this physical body of ours in the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. You remember? When he proclaimed the first sermon to the five ascetics, which basically is the Four Noble Truths and its three turnings, the essence of his teaching, at that time, only one of the ascetics, Kondanya, become a sotapan. Then they rejoice. But when the Buddha follow with this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, you know what happened? All the five ascetics become arahant. You want to become arahant? Now listen. Develop the understanding. You can. No problem. With what I taught you, combined with what the Buddha taught the monk, you can awaken. But you must have your parami from the past. Because these five ascetics, they have parami from the past. They are in fact the wise one at the time when the Buddha was born. And Kondanya was the youngest. And Kondanya got affinity with Sakyamuni Buddha, because when Kondanya was a king in the distant past, the king of Kosala, he actually helped Sakyamuni Buddha to perfect his that paramita of Kanti, patience. And because of that, the Buddha said, don't worry. But the king panicked, trembled when he saw what happened. He tear apart the four limbs. Then the four limbs came back to the Buddha when the Buddha pronounced that affirmation. He said, if what I speak is the truth, means he has perfected his paramita of patience. Means there is no anger or no even the slightest aversion when the king of Kosala tear apart his four limbs. May my limbs come back to me. The affirmation, the four limbs came back to him. So this is what the power of affirmation can give rise to. And these are nature's law. It's nothing to do with psychic. But without that parami, you don't try to be like Sakyamuni Buddha. Don't think you can also do magic. So what happened is, after that, Sakyamuni Buddha told him, don't worry. Since you helped me, when the time come, when he became the Sammasambuddha, he tell Konanya, I will take you across. You will be the first to be taken across. That's how he became a Sotapan upon the first sermon. So all these are affinity. Yeah. Then Sariputta and Moggallana, they make aspiration to become the chief disciple of Sakyamuni. Their parami fulfilled. Then Yasodhara, the parami is the aspiration to become the wife of the Sammasambuddha. That's why he fulfilled. Then Rahula also same, to be the son. Then Sujata make that affirmation to offer the milk rice to a being before they become Sammasambuddha. And all this are recorded in the Jataka story. So when you have faith and understanding, you know how to use the power of Adhitana. A lot of these things can become a reality. It can like manifest into the pure wish that the individual develop. So whatever Adhitana or affirmation that you want to make, you must make with sincerity, faith, understanding, and enough of this parami. Because not only you want, there are maybe, I don't know, millions or billions also fighting for that. And like sports, at any one tournament or whatever, there can only be one champion. So the chances is you have to be the best, among the best, to really fulfill that. Okay, now we go into it. All beings should take pain to understand the characteristics of anatta, non-self, which provide meshless deliverance from self-belief or sakyadity. As taught by the Supreme Lord Buddha, the teaching is given so that those who meditate on experiential reality may arrive at perfect comprehension. It is for the development of perfect understanding of this phenomena and for the investigation of all defiled mind movements. The consequence of this practice is total deliverance, means enlightenment. So, desirous of bringing this teaching forth with its great benefit, let us now recite this sutta. Thus have I heard, at one time, the Blessed One was dwelling at Benares at Isipatana in the Diapa. There he addressed the group of bhikkhu, the five ascetic, that follow him. He said, form, bhikkhu, is non-self, means not a permanent unchanging entity. If bhikkhu, form, were self, then form would not lead to affliction. True or not? If it's you can control, you can decide what you want to do. Don't get old, don't get sick, don't die. It listens to you. But because it is non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity that you can control and decide, then it will not listen to you. We are all listen to what? Nature's law that governs life and existence. We live in a conditioned world. So this is why the Buddha say, form, bhikkhu, is non-self. If it is self, then form would not lead to affliction. And one might be able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus. Let my form not be thus. But since bhikkhu, form, all external form, and including your physical body, the physical form, is non-self, the anatta nature. Form, therefore, leads to affliction. And one is not able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. Like what I told you. If it's me, I can command this body. Don't get old, don't get sick, don't die. You think this body want to get sick, it tell you or not? It don't tell you. Then you tell him, don't die, don't get old. He said, the hell with you, I follow another teacher, the nature's law that governs life and nature. So the elements, the physical form, external form, they go the way of nature. It's not a permanent unchanging entity, it's not you. You cannot have control over it. So this is easier to understand. Understand not? Then he repeat with feeling. Feeling is non-self. If feeling is self, it will not lead to affliction. Then you can command that feeling. Understand not? So, because they don't have sati at that time, understand not? The disciple. So this way of teaching them is easier. Easier for them to accept, easier for them to relate to, understand not? But if you have sati, you will see the dependent originating nature, the coming and the going. Then you can see a weakness that this physical body is in a state of flux. You know what is in a state of flux? Every moment changing, arising and passing away. Vibration is everywhere, understand not? The life force, everything. And the cells are growing, decaying, dying, and transforming. Some disease and other things. But when your thought process has a lot of negative emotion, fear, worry, anxiety, your immune system breaks down. Your cells mutate, and they become cancerous. That's why people succumb to cancer and all those traumatic diseases. It's because their mind state are defiled. And the scientist has come out with the research where you put all the water sample that has been subject to different vibration in nature, you put under the microscope, especially those very polluted water with a lot of sound pollution, contamination, their crystal mutate and very uneven. But those in the nature's condition, like a natural forest area or mountainous area where no human being disturbed and everything is very harmonious, nature's vibration, everything is very conducive, then the crystal come out very beautiful. They even take sample from religious places, like temple, churches, where a lot of chanting vibration. All the crystal very beautiful. So when we understand that, we reflect, our physical body 80% is liquid. So if the thought you arise has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, negative energy field, especially fear, worry, anxiety, what will happen to you? It will cause your cells to mutate and deteriorate. Your immune system will go down. That's why you must have love, you must have metta, you must have virtue. No more negativity to have the good physical body and life. So all this, hopefully you can understand. So we will skip. He repeat for sanya, he repeat for vijnanang, asankara and vijnanang. Then after that, he go on, next page. He said, what do you think about this, bhikkhu? Is your physical body, rupang, permanent? The monk sure know, because they see everybody get old, get sick and die. So they answer, is form permanent or impermanent? They answer, Lord, impermanent. So if it's impermanent, but is that which is impermanent painful or pleasurable? Huh? What do you think? Definitely painful. Well, it will change. When you get old, get sick, get injury, about to die, you think this is pleasurable. Understand or not? Then whatever pleasant state, even your feeling, your perception, your sankhara, mind state, and your consciousness, this is of the nature to change. So you cannot say forever remain pleasant, forever remain good feeling. No such thing. It will bring about suffering or pain. That's why the Buddha continued, is it? But it's that which is permanent, painful, or pleasurable. The monk replied, painful. Then he said, if that is so, is it fit to say that which is impermanent, painful, and of the nature to change, as this is mine, this is I, and therefore all this can be mine? So straight away they know that it is not, Lord. That's why they developed the wisdom. And after that, the monk, the Buddha continued with all the five aggregates. Then you turn to the next page. So he repeat for all this, and he say, whatever that is impermanent, painful, and is of the nature to change, as this is, to take them as this is mine, this is I, and all this can be mine, it is not, Lord. Then he summarized and told the bhikkhu, that therefore, bhikkhu, whatever form there is, whether past, present, or future, internal form or external form, internal form is your mental form created by your mundane thinking. External form is what you perceive externally. Gross or subtle, inferior or superior, whether it is far or near, all forms should, by means of right wisdom, means right view, right understanding, be regarded as what? This is not mine. This is not me. I am not this. This is non-self. So this delusion can only break when you see things as they are and realize the awakening. But the mindfulness that see the arising and passing away, the dependent, that one is more penetrative. That's why that one, when I saw, I realized this one not real, not what you think. Then I saw the three conditions that manifest and animate this into a human being, a living being. So how can it be you? They are dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, no reality. Then the Buddha continued. He said, for all the other aggregate, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. Then he summarized, he told the monk, seeing in this way, bhikkhu, the wise noble disciple become disenchanted with form, becomes disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perception, disenchanted with mental formation, become disenchanted with consciousness. Becoming disenchanted, their passion fade away. With the fading away of craving or passion, the heart is liberated. With liberation, there comes the knowledge. it is liberated, and they know destroy its birth. The holy light has been lived out. Done is what to be done. There is no more coming into any state of being. Thus spoke the Blessed One, delighted, and the group of five bhikkhus rejoiced in what Lord Buddha had said. Moreover, while this discourse was being delivered, the mind of the five bhikkhus or ascetics were free from defilement through clinging no more. Means they become arahant. Okay? So this is a very beautiful Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, Sutta on non-self. Not the permanent unchanging entity where you can cling on to, grasp on to, and hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. No such thing. Okay? So, can I understand? Yeah. Okay. We rejoice, then we continue. Yeah? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Anybody transform? Don't worry, yeah? The time will come. But many who understand, they're already rejoicing. Yeah? Mm. Okay, so now, after the reflection, we're supposed to do meditation, but don't after your breakfast. I think we continue with the Dhamma sharing. Okay, Manyat, continue. We were at the Six Patriarch Sutta.
Page 16. Mm. However, the disciples said to each other that they didn't need to write any gatha, and that surely their teacher and head monk, Venerable Shen Xiu, would become the sixth patriarch. So only Shen Xiu wrote a gatha for Master Hong Ren. But as the head monk, Shen Xiu was well respected and under great pressure to produce a gatha that would qualify him as the next patriarch. However, he was uncertain as to his own understanding, and eventually decided to write a poem anonymously on the wall in the middle of the night, announcing his authorship only if Master Hong Ren approved of it. It stated, Shen Si Pu Ti Su, the body is like a Bodhi tree. Xing Ru Ming Jing Tai, the mind a mirror bright on the stand. Si Si Qing Fu Shi, polish until it shines. Wu Shi Ren Chen Ai, so that
I no think the Mandarin let English read. We are Amosai on, I think, one year. Shen Ru Pu Ti Su, you start there. Then you read the English translation also.
Shen Si Pu Ti Su. The body is like a Bodhi tree. Xing Lu Ming Jing Tai. The mind a mirror bright on a stand. Si Si Qin Fu Si. Polish until it shines. Wu Si Ren Chen Ai. So that no dust can alight.
Okay, this poem actually is not bad, but Shen Xiu has not penetrated the awareness nature. He grasps at the mundane mind and he developed the understanding of the cultivation to perfect this mundane mind, thinking that by constantly polish until it shines, then there is no dust or defilement to stay there. And he thought that is enlightenment. But he was actually wrong. So when he wrote this poem, actually based on Theravada tradition, he is not wrong. He is right. But he didn't reach the point where he realized the cessation of form and mind to realize the true mind. That's why his poem can only reach there. And he takes the mundane mind to be the true mind. That's why in his poem, he said, our body is like a Bodhi tree. You know what is a Bodhi tree or not? Yeah? What is a Bodhi tree? Tree of enlightenment is built. The Buddha sat underneath and become enlightened. That's why they call it the Bodhi tree. Bodhi is wisdom, enlightenment. So the reason why Shen Xiu came to this is because he studied some of the basic Dhamma from the Theravada tradition that was passed down to the Mahayana tradition. You remember the four foundations of mindfulness? Mahayana also had the teaching, Si Nian Chu. So he know within this body, like the Buddha quote, within this phantom length body, along with the translation of the commentary say, along with thought and perception, but actually is along with mindfulness and perception. I proclaim the world, the cause of the arising of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path that leads to the cessation of the world. So the Buddha also expressed it in that term. He said, within this phantom length body, the four foundations of mindfulness are there. That's why you can realize the Four Noble Truths. You proclaim the world. The world is what? Suffering is. Then the cause of arising of the world means the existential world. The cause of arising of suffering within the existential world. Then he also proclaimed the cessation of the world, means suffering can end, and the path that leads to its cessation. So the first foundation of mindfulness is kaya nupassana. So within this physical body, we have our physical kaya. That's why you can use that to meditate, to develop kaya nupassana, the sixth category of practice. Starting with anapanasati, our breath is always with us. Then mindfulness of the four postures. Then mindfulness of sati sampajana, all action, all movement in the present moment. Then he moved to the mindfulness of the four elements, 32 parts, and the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition. Then within our phantom blank body also, there is what we have as sense basis arise feeling. So you can cultivate mindfulness of feeling, Vedana Nupassana, also inside here. Then there is thought process, mind state. We call it Chitta. So Chitta Nupassana is mindfulness of the content of consciousness. Mindfulness of Chitta. Then finally is Dhamma Nupassana, or mindfulness of Dhamma. And all this category of Dhamma, which the Buddha highlighted in the fourth foundation of mindfulness, the sixth category of practices. First is the five mental hindrance. They are also inside our form and mind. Second is the five aggregates of form and mind. Then the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. They are also inside us. Yeah. Then after that, the seven factors of enlightenment, when you cultivate correctly, they also arise in us. Then finally is the Four Noble Truths, mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths when it's tree turning. So they are all Dhamma, which exists in the phantom length body. That's why Shen Xiu say, Shen Si Pu Ti Su, he say, our body is like a Bodhi tree, understand? Because it can make you enlightened. Give rise to wisdom. Then, Xing Zhu Ming Qing Tai, this is where he got it wrong. He said the mind is a mirror bright, understand. Because that mundane mind, he take it to be the true mind. That's where he go wrong. So he thought this mundane mind, I must polish it until it shine. That's why he said, Si Si Qing Fo Si. Means polish until it shine, so that no dust can alight on the mundane mind. You ask yourself a very simple question. Is that enlightenment? If that is enlightenment, I don't want. Why? Ever mindful. Like that thing, no, cannot have dust. No. Enlightenment is wisdom, understand? No. You only develop the heedfulness to be ever mindful and constantly meditative when you are under training. After you have done the training, you're supposed to realize the true mind, understand? The problem with Sensio is he didn't finish the last part. He was actually at the gate of enlightenment, but he doesn't know how to go in. But he thought that is the true mind. That is where the very slight wrong view can cause deviation. And he doesn't know how to silence everything and let it cease. He keep on guarding that mundane mind, understand? Like ever mindful, must not make mistake. Then he created defilement. You know what will happen when you do that? Means you arise a duality. You only want the what they call wholesome state. The non-wholesome or defiled state you reject. You create duality and you want to do away with duality. How can you do that? Because the world is the world. Condition like that, things will like that. So when you create duality, then you want to perfect it, polish until it's shine so that no dust can align. You are actually wasting your time, understand or not? In the first place, like the Buddha said, imas means sati idang hoti. When these arise, that arise. You create defilement means whatever that is not defilement is wholesomeness. So you cling on to wholesomeness. But the moment you create wholesomeness, defilement arise. Understand not? And these two, you cannot wipe it off because they are a pair. They are reality within existence. So don't create, the Buddha said, imas means sati idang hoti, it will be there. Imas means asati. If this ceases, what you define as defiled or wholesome ceases. Idang nahoti. The other one also ceases. Means what? Transcend duality, understand not? Don't create through your mundane mind. But this is what your mundane mind tells you. Right and wrong, good and bad. Wholesome and unwholesome, defilement. So you keep on fighting against your own creation, which is mundane delusion. Understand or not? That's why he cannot penetrate. He stay there. Then, Man Yuan read on. Then I will explain further.
When the disciples saw this gatha on the wall, there was a great stir, but when Master Hong Ren saw it, he told them, practice according to this gatha, you will not fall into the evil realms, and you will receive great benefits. Light incense and pay respect to this gatha. Recite it, and you will see your essential nature.
You see, the fifth patriarch is so precise. Oh. You know why he say, practice according to this gatha, you will not fall into the evil realm. Why he say that? Who will not break the five precepts and fall into the evil realm? Sotapanna, I say, the sainthood way. You follow the four foundations of mindfulness, you can have a glimpse later on and become at least a sotapanna. That's why he say, you will receive great merits because you are cultivating the four foundations of mindfulness. So he said, light incense and pay respect to this gatha. Recite it and you will see your nature, essential nature. Means, since you haven't seen, understand not? If you do it correctly, finally you will have a glimpse and you will see your own essential nature. Read on.
All the disciples praise and memorize the gatha. However, privately, Master Hong Ren Tong Sensio, you have arrived at the gate of enlightenment.
He has arrived at the gate of enlightenment. He doesn't know how to go in. Why? Well, he creates duality and attached to the mundane mind as the true mind. Or in another way to say it, he cannot see the door. Cannot see the door, don't know how to go in. Actually, there is no door. Your delusion gone. That's why I say only wisdom free. When that duality delusion is gone, when you don't hold on to the mundane mind, you just let things be, then you transcend duality and everything ceases. Don't create anasana. No more creation means no more mundane mind. When the mundane mind ceases to be, you will realize your true mind. That's what awareness meditation is all about. Don't try to create, don't try to know, don't try to do. Don't create through the sankhara movement, activity. Because these are dependent originating mind state. Mundane thinking, mundane thought process, mundane creation within the phenomenal world. This is not intrinsic within that nature. That nature got nothing. No word, nothing. Just that nature. Like the spiritual nature, the karmic nature, there is nothing. It's not a being. It cannot come out and live life. So stabilize your awareness and realize that so that you are not deluded. And then from there, everything that arises, you see very clearly. Hey, all these are dependent originating, condition arising mind state. Like the Buddha said, mind make ade. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. This is creation. Understand? The four circle formation. After the pure awareness nature, the mundane mind come about, the phenomenal world of consciousness come about, the whole creation arise. That's how you meditate to realize the enlightenment, the awakening. That's why here, Hongren, the fifth Bhatia say, you have arrived at the gate of enlightenment. But heaven, what is that word? Read lah. Hey, louder, louder. Haven't entered it. Understand? No? Joey also read already. So you haven't entered it means what? With this level of understanding, you still have no idea of what that supreme Bodhi mind is. Means that true mind, the pure awareness nature. Upon hearing my words, the fifth Bhatia say, you should immediately recognize the original mind or the essential nature which is unborn and unceasing because it is the unconditioned. At all times, see it clearly in every thought with the mind free from all mental hindrance. At all times, no means you have this awareness nature within that is always with you, no? Especially after your mundane mind collapse, that nature is always with you, understand? No? That is the training, that is the cultivation. That's why the fifth Bhatia, he already had gone through all those phases and realization. He said, in that one reality, everything become real and all phenomena are just as they are. Suchness. See? So beautiful. So now, can you all understand? Why look at me? Ask yourself. Rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu. Explain until like that already. Some more cannot understand. Like sincere. You know what happened to him? If I'm not wrong. He must have panicked. Understand? When the teacher tell him, you are at the gate of enlightenment, you have not entered it. Which means you have no idea what the Supreme Bodhi mind is. He panicked down there. I am so near and yet so far. What is this? Then you know what happens? Hongren told him. Hongren asked Shen Xiu to compose another gatha that demonstrates true understanding. Shen Xiu tried hard, but couldn't come out with another verse. You know what happened? Panic until the restlessness, the worry, the anxiety, all that. Cannot think already. Because he used the thought, understand? He tried to understand through the thought. Sure, cannot get it. That's why he, pity him, so well practiced for so long. Mahayana, Hongren chief disciple at that time, before Hui Neng arrived. And yet, he cannot penetrate. You say easy? It's not easy, is it? But you say difficult for people like the fifth patriarch Hongren and sixth patriarch Hui Neng. Not difficult, understand? But to them who have realized from the past, it's very easy. Like this line, when I read, I understand. That's why I can explain to you all. So after that, what happened is, when a young novice, this one I asked Manyuan to read on.
When a young novice passed the rice mill reciting Shen Xiu's gatha, Hui Neng immediately knew these words lacked true insight. He went to the wall and asked a district officer there to write a poem of his own for him. The officer was surprised. How extraordinary! You are an illiterate and you want to compose a gatha. Whereupon Hui Neng said, if you seek supreme enlightenment, do not slight anyone. The lowest class may have great insights, and the highest class may commit foolish acts. In veneration, the officer wrote Hui Neng's gatha on the wall for him, next to Shen Xiu's, which stated.
Puti ben wu su. Body is fundamentally without any tree. Ming jing yi fei tai. The mind is neither a stand nor a mirror bright. Ben lai wu yi wu. Originally there was nothing. He chu re chen ai. Where can any dust alight?
So this poem actually is so beautiful that it tear apart Shen Xiu's poem, completely tear apart. Do you know why or not? Because Hui Neng has realized the true mind. So he said, Bohi is not a tree. What is Bohi? It's an enlightenment, it's a wisdom, it's an insight, that awaken to the direct seeing, the true mind. That's why the first stanza already tear apart the Shen Xiu one. At Theravada level, yes, this body is like a Bohi tree. You can use it to cultivate. Not wrong. But at the level of the enlightened being, Bohi is not a tree. How can Bohi be a tree? Then, Ming Jing Yi Fei Tai, tear apart from his belief that the mundane mind means the mind which is like a mirror bright on a stand, he thought that is the true mind. That is not the true mind, that is the mundane mind. That's why he said, Ming Jing Yi Fei Tai. So what he means is the mind, the true mind, is neither the mirror bright nor the stand. Understand now? Then he said, the true mind has got nothing. Ben lai wu yi wu, he chu re chen ai. Because if you don't hold on to any duality, because the nature is pure awareness nature, understand or not? No duality, nothing, no word. Then you go and create the duality, a word, dust. That's why that dust can alight on the mundane mind. But in the true mind, no dust can alight. Why? Because it's empty. There is nothing there. The meaning of emptiness in Heart Sutta, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. In true emptiness, all this don't exist. That's why Shen Xiu, after he penetrated that, he can come out with his poem. So when you develop the awareness nature or awareness-based training to develop the ability to realize that true mind or your true essential nature, then you will understand all this. Then no more delusion. You see very clearly. Every moment, every instant. This and the created phenomenal world or existential world's reality, they are completely different. Understand not? One is the unconditioned, the other one is the conditioned. And you see them very clearly. And once you have that awakening, how can you be deluded by the phenomenal world? The phenomenal world is what they are. They have their own law. They have their own Dhamma. They have their own duality. Their own law of karma. They recognize reality. Everything exists within the existential world. But within that nature, nothing. Understand not? That nothing is unborn. Understand not? Because it was there originally, original nature, the true nature. From there, the source, everything come to be. So to realize that is very important. So that you understand how originally that source is, or the oneness nature, or the unconditioned, they call it Nibbana or whatever. So that one is not an individual entity that belongs to somebody. That one is all Samasambuddha, all the great beings, they will realize that nature. But from there, everything arises. They only seize their mind through the realization of wisdom and go in. And not really a being went in. The mundane mind realizes itself and sees, then the thing just manifests and become what it is. Means return to the original nature, that true nature. And inside there is the unconditioned. You cannot describe, you cannot talk, you cannot use word to actually describe it. But the world, one explanation. That's why the Buddha, and the same with J. Krishnamurti, he always talk in the negation. In the negation. Yeah. What that thing is not. You cannot talk about that thing. That thing is nothing to do with the conditioned world. Yeah. That's why he always say in the negation. Yeah. So he never try to use any word to describe. Because you cannot describe. Anything you describe is not the thing. Just like the Tao. Tao ke Tao. Fei chang Tao. Means the Tao that can be spoken or described is not the true Tao. That's all. The Tao is that thing. The original Tao, where all things is there. The Mandarin word is very good. One Wu. One Wu and what already, I forgot already. Yeah. Means the whole Tao is the oneness. Everything is inside there. The phenomena and the pneumonia, they are all there. Yeah. But from there, the pneumonia, it manifests the phenomena. You understand? The phenomena is actually condition arising from the pneumonia. You know what is the pneumonia? Yeah? The opposite of phenomena. The pneumonia is like that great void, understand or not? Nothing inside there, that nature. But from there, the phenomena will come about, understand or not? So the phenomena world, you cannot say it's inside the pneumonia. But from there, it arises, you see. So to understand this, you need to silence and go in. And realize what that thing is. You need to go to Bodhisattva and stabilize all this. Okay? Then I read on. Because the next part is the most interesting. Man Yuan, you read first. Yeah? Yeah.
Hui Nan then went back to rice. However, this gatha created a bigger stir. Everyone was saying, amazing, you can't judge a person by his looks. Maybe he will become a living Bodhisattva soon. However, when the Master Hong Ren came out, he just casually said, this hasn't seen the essential nature either, and proceeded to wipe the gatha off with his shoe. The fifth patriarch then went secretly to the room where the rice was pounded. Seeing that Hui Neng was working there with a stone pestle, he said to him, a seeker of the path risked his life for the Dharma. Should he not do so? The fifth patriarch then asked, is the rice ready? Hui Neng replied, ready long ago, only waiting for the sieve. The fifth patriarch then knocked the mortar thrice with stick and left. Knowing what the fifth patriarch meant, in the midnight of the third wash, Hui Neng went to the fifth patriarch's room. That night, Master Hong Ren received Hui Neng in his abode and expounded the Diamond Sutra to him. When he came to the passage, to use the mind, yet be free from any attachment, Hui Neng came to a great enlightenment that all Dharma are inseparable from the self nature. He exclaimed, "How amazing that the self nature is originally pure! How amazing that the self nature is unborn and undying! How amazing that the self nature is inherently complete! How amazing that the self nature neither moves nor stays! How amazing that all Dharma come from this self nature!" Master Hong Ren told Hui Neng, "If one recognizes the original mind and the original nature, he is called a great man, teacher of gods and humans, and a Buddha." He passed the rope and begging bowl as a symbol of the Dharma seal of sudden enlightenment to Hui Neng. Although this story is as clearly stated as it can be, it should also be noted that Hui Neng was not permitted to make himself known as the sixth patriarch until later on. This was due to the fear that his fellow monks might be angered and harm him, that he had been made the sixth patriarch and not Shen Xiu or one of the other monks who had seniority over him.
So this is the most beautiful part. I will explain the last part. Page 17, last paragraph. So after what happened, Hui Neng went to the fifth patriarch's room. That night, Master Hong Ren, the fifth patriarch, received Hui Neng in his abode and expounded the Diamond Sutra. You know what is the Diamond Sutra? Jing Gang Jing. Yeah? And this sutra is very powerful. When he came to the passage, "To use the mind, yet be free from any attachment, Hui Neng came to great awakening." So now I read to you. To use the mind and yet not to attach to that mind, anything happened to you or not? If you really have the understanding, you will rejoice and have the understanding. Because what he's trying to tell Hui Neng is that mundane mind, which Hui Neng don't have. He was born without the mundane mind. That's why he got that missing link that he need to understand, the jigsaw puzzle. So when the fifth patriarch told him to use that mind, yet be free from any attachment from it, that refers to the mundane mind. But since Hui Neng don't have the mundane mind, he has the supramundane mind, Hanasana. And he straight away understood the whole teaching. Why? Because he born without the mundane mind, he was born with that true nature. And he's always there. That's why he understands that inside out. But he doesn't know that the normal human being got a mundane mind, Hanasana. He have a supramundane mind. But he doesn't know that that mind actually can be used as a mundane mind. But because he is without delusion and ignorance, he doesn't know what that thing is. Yeah. So when he used this phrase, to use the mind, yet be free from attachment, which he don't have, then he understood how living beings get into trouble. Understand? That's why after that, Hui Neng straight away came to great enlightenment. Then he said, "Whoa! Now I understand," he said. "All Dharma are inseparable from that self nature." Why did he say that? What are all Dharma? All dependent originating Dharma, conditioned arising Dharma, the existential world, the creation. They are not apart from that self nature, Anasana, that he has realized. So he understood the whole thing now. Then after that, next page, you know what he said? He exclaimed, "No, wow, how amazing that the self nature is originally pure. How amazing that self nature is unborn, undying, Because it's the unborn. That's why it can never die, understand? Whatever that is not born originally like that, how can it die, understand? Then he said, how amazing that the self nature is inherently complete and perfect. That's why I say, let your nature develop the movement and awaken and open up everything inside the awareness nature until the Bodhi mind that illuminate that nature arise. So this is what the Mahayana Bodhisattva way cultivation is. When you reach that nature, you have the understanding and you know what these things are. And these are not just words, no. They are very, very profound. And they are so precise that it summarizes the whole understanding there. Then he continued, he said, how amazing that the self nature is inherently complete. How amazing that the self nature neither move nor stay. How amazing that all Dhamma come from that self nature. So now you understand why the Buddha say under Dhammapada verse 1 and 3, mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arise, all things arise. This is what the fifth patriarch told Hui Ning. And because Hui Ning don't have a mundane mind, so he need to hear it from a patriarch who has awakened to understand all this. Yeah. For me, I have a mundane mind. But the mundane mind collapsed 9 months after I connect and go in. That's why after that, I know the two. Then after that thing collapsed, that's why within that 9 months, I try to recollect what went through. No? I know once that collapse happened, I cannot go back to my old mundane mind to teach you all and explain to you all the double. I will not know how you all actually entangle yourself. But at that time, during that 9 months, I saw the transformation. Then when that whole nature collapsed, the mundane mind collapsed, not the nature collapsed, sorry. The mundane mind collapsed, the whole nature shined forth. Then like, how come it's like that? Like no more cloud, nothing obscure, that nature just awareness nature shine forth. It's like the sun, no cloud. Nothing to obscure you, pure, bright sky, The whole illumination shine forth. And if you are that sun, means what? You see clearly, that illumination. That's why Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, when he illuminate the five skanda, it's like his pure nature shine forth, understand? Then he realized that they are all empty. It's happened to me also. 9 months after I located the gateway, went in, then the mundane mind collapsed. Then I realized everything is just the way it is. The five aggregate, everything really empty. No reality. No mark. He no you, he no me. Everything is just the way it is. Dependent originating condition, arising cause of phenomena, mighty nature ruling. Then all the things that I contemplate, reflect, and learn before all come back to me. And they were so beautiful. So this is how cultivation can really bring about this understanding and transformation. And the last part is the best. Master Hong Ren told Hui Ning, if one recognizes the original mind, means Ben Lai De Mian Mu, or the original nature, he is called the great man, teacher of God and man, and a Buddha. Then he passed the rope and begging bowl as a symbol of the Dhamma seal of sudden enlightenment to Hui Ning. Why did they use the word sudden? Yeah? In fact, all enlightenment are sudden. There is no gradual. Yeah. That's why even in the Theravada Sutta, they got two types of liberation. You heard of these two types, isn't it? They call it by what? Cheto Vimutti and Panya Vimutti. So Vimutti is liberation. Panya Vimuti. Cheto Vimuti. So Panya is wisdom. Cheto is to develop the stability of mind. Means they can go through jhana or whatever, but they have to release it out to normal daily mindfulness or normal awareness. We call it the upachara samadhi, not the apana samadhi. Cheto is go too deep, apana samadhi. So through cheto, you can also come out and develop panya vimutti. That's why everything is panya. The moment you understand that wisdom, trigger of enlightenment, is always sudden enlightenment. That's why during the time of the fifth patriarch and Sun Siu and the sixth patriarch, Sun Siu only understood up to the level he cultivated. And he taught the northern teaching. And he teach the disciple, you must practice hard, cultivate, understand? Then gradually, one day, you realize enlightenment. So that is the gradual teaching. So when some of the disciples, they actually have this thought, no? They feel that Sun Siu should be the sixth patriarch, no? Not Hui Ning. No? So they all been biased. They want to penetrate Sun Siu to become, pretend to be disciple and find out what he teach. Then come back and tell Sun Siu. By the end, all went, never come back. Because when they went to Hui Neng, you read the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, you understand. All the disciples of Sun Siu kena kau kau on Hui Neng. Got one of them bow, but the head didn't touch the ground. Then kena reprimand. Then a few thought they know. No? There was one, don't know, recite, don't know what sutta, how many thousand times. No? Until Hui Ning tell him off. No? He said, you can go and recite until the cow come home, also no use. You know, what you need to realize is, whatever Dhamma understanding must come from the self nature. Understand? No? If it's not from the self nature, means you approach it from the mundane mind, cultivate, contemplate, reflect. This gradual is not what he teach. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path that Sun Siu teach and Hui Neng teach are very different. So he came out with the stanza, no? You go and read the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, very beautiful. He said, what he teach is from that self nature, it come out, understand? Not from memory, not from Dhamma knowledge. That's why it's so different. So whatever Dhamma that is not from the self-nature is not the true Dhamma. He say that word, no? Because from here, only you can realize the true wisdom and awaken. And all enlightenment is sudden. There is no such thing as gradual. The only different is people don't understand. Your sudden means, like I said, wisdom is like that. You have means you have. You don't have means you don't have. You have is with your nature. No need to remember. Then when the situation arises, it will prompt you. Yoniso manasika, it will come out and prompt you. Then you will not be deluded and you cannot entangle yourself anymore. That's why the true Dhamma is very unique, very different. Okay? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, what's the time already? Oh, still got time. Yeah? Okay. Manya, continue. Next page. Yeah.
Part 1, recapitulation and...
Part 1, recapitulation and emphasis on the previous lesson. 1.1, why must we go through the introductions by Master Suyenghua? Question 1, Why must we go through the introductions by Master Xuan Hua instead of going into the Heart Sutra teaching direct? Brother Teo, a very good question. It will be like building a high-rise building without having a stable foundation. As I have explained, the Heart Sutra is a very profound teaching, and it must be understood that without a proper foundation being taught to you, it is almost near to impossible to understand this teaching unless some of you have had some very strong past cultivation to help support you in the understanding of this sutra. Hence, this is the reason why I started off by introducing to you the final summary of the First Noble Truth of Dukkha, followed by an in-depth explanation of the meaning of the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind in the first Heart Sutra class. This is to help establish a basis for you to understand the great similarity between Sakyamuni's Buddha's teaching and that of the Heart Sutra as expounded by Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Both teachers emphasize the importance of understanding the five aggregates of form and mind and why they are all empty, i.e. anatta and sunatta.
Okay, stop there for a while. I need to use this to explain to Xing Hua. Xing Hua, just now you heard? Did you heard what Man Yuan just read through? About the five aggregates of form and mind, the two aspects. Oh, no wonder. This is the question you asked me. Now I read to you again, better. But there was a question somebody asked. Why must we go through the introduction by Master Xuan Hua instead of going into the Heart Sutra teaching direct? So I answered, a very good question. Now you pay attention. It will be like building a high-rise building without having a stable foundation. As I have explained, the Heart Sutra is very profound, a very profound teaching, and it must be understood that without a proper foundation being taught to you, it is almost near to impossible to understand this teaching unless some of you have some very strong past cultivation to help support you in the understanding of this sutta, which is a Heart Sutra. Hence, this is the reason why I started off by introducing to you the final summary of the First Noble Truth, followed by the in-depth explanation of the meaning of the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind in the first Heart Sutra class. This is to help establish a basis for you to understand the great similarity between Sakyamuni Buddha's teaching and that of the Heart Sutra, as expounded by Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Both teachers emphasize the importance of understanding the five aggregates of form and mind and why they are all empty, anatta and sunyata nature. So now you recall, you were asking me, is it necessary to understand the five aggregates of form and mind? Without this, there is no foundation. And to arise that type of question, that's why you pardon me for using the word that you have been gullible. I withdraw that word. Maybe a bit hard and strong for you. You can say, don't worry. No problem. Just on the mic.
If I just, I understand the importance. I mean, it is important to understand the aggregate. Because if not, then the delusional part of us will persist. To see ourselves as person, right?
Yeah.
So
not only that, that one is the sakyaditi part, the self-delusion. But your question is it necessary to know in depth about the two aspects of the five aggregates of form and mind? That is where I say, because of your karmic past and all your whatever training that you go through that make you gullible, and so you tend to have the tendency to say, all this I think not necessary. So you want to ask, is it necessary? Is it necessary? Of course you will shake your head, just like how you asked me the question last night. Not to say I don't want to answer you. I can also do it easy. Your life, you decide, because cultivation is based on individual. But what is important is, it so happened under this section, this was highlighted, no. I didn't even remember this, no. But because it was highlighted, as I want you to read and understand this, to understand how you actually get yourself into that situation. But to you is, must I understand the two aspects of the five aggregate of form, am I in that depth? But to you said, not easy for you to understand. But for others, they will straight away know because their past will give them the understanding. If I don't know what is this five aggregate of form and mind, how can I put it to test? But the Buddha said, all suffering arise because living beings through their own delusion, sakyadity, attach and cling to this five aggregate. So if I don't know what they are, how can I put it to test? How can I find out what the Buddha says is true or not? And this is basic, fundamental. That's something you need to understand. And for a cultivator to ask that, pardon me for saying again, it's from your past karmic thing. Understand? Not? And whatever word I say, don't feel hurt. Understand? Not? Because at this moment, you may not understand what I meant. I say most of you are gullible in the sense that you just take what you want to believe in and from there use your thought to analyze and try to understand. If you use your thought, you can never understand. That at that present state of mind and understanding with the thought trying to understand, you will always say, you are not that type, which I withdraw the word, which I say you are one of the gullible ones. Maybe you feel that word is not suitable, I withdraw, no problem. What is important is you see for yourself how through karmic conditioning you ask like that. Because you, being a cultivator because of your past, you cannot see the importance of certain aspect of the Dhamma that you need to cultivate and learn. You understand? That's why that question can come up. Then I gave you another example, you remember? I say, if you are like the others that say, the Abhidhamma so complicated, must we know or must we study? At that one, I will tell you, no need to know. No need to study. Not to say they are not important. You cultivate first, but that one really difficult. Too much knowledge behind and too much what they call abstract thing inside. Even they themselves who teach, they also don't quite have the understanding. Well, without the penetrative direct seeing and awakening, you cannot understand what the Abhidhamma is trying to tell you. It's very profound. So different situation requires different answer, understand? So for your case, because when you ask that, I straight away tell you it's very easy. If you don't learn this, which is the basic, the foundation, then how can you put to test? Then how can you build up all your understanding? Because from this teaching, Theravada tradition and the Heart Sutta, they are the same. From there, you penetrate the whole understanding of life, existence, and the teaching. So in order to develop clear understanding, what one needs to do is the essential Dhamma that needs to be understood has to be cultivated. And these essential Dhamma are very basic. That's why the essential Dhamma that I teach you, I never include Abhidhamma. Understand? To me, not important. As you cultivate, when you have the realization, you can read any Abhidhamma book, you will understand. Okay? Yeah. Let my daughter add something.
I was hoping to add an emphasis to why five aggregates of form mind is extremely important. From what I observe, the five aggregates of form and mind is the crux of the First Noble Truth. Because the conclusion of the First Noble Truth is that our attachment to the five aggregates of form and mind is
what defines suffering to the human being, which means all the war, all the conflict, everything we see in the world, all the negativity came from attachment to the five aggregates of form and mind. To not be able to investigate into the five aggregates of form and mind, we will not know why there is so much suffering in the world. So that's something I want to
say. Let's rejoice. Sadhu. So, you can add,
Okay, first of all, I would like to thank you very much for bringing this topic up again to help me further understand. But allow me also to clarify a little bit
more.
No
problem.
Basically, when I ask that question, I'm not questioning the Buddha's teachings at all. All right, and I admit to you that my understanding is very low. I mean, very little. And also, my how shall I say? Because all this while, I'm not exposed to Mahayana teaching, honestly. So obviously, I don't know many things. I seek to understand. That's why I comfort.
Fair enough.
I know there are loopholes in my understanding, and I'm still seeking. And I always.
Okay, it's good. Sadhu.
The way. There are a lot of
constructions. Okay, good.
Of suffering. Definitely. But when I ask, and whether, because yes, I found it so difficult to understand, right?
I don't blame you, because to you it's like very difficult.
So secondly, I was also thinking, maybe that kind of understanding we need, we want to follow the Buddha's, the Bodhisattva path. You know, in my limited understanding, Bodhisattva path, yes, you really need to understand. So all this while, honestly, I thought that I would end as Arahant.
No, even as an Arahant, you need to understand the five aggregate, because Anatta Lakkhana Sutta also five aggregate, understand?
Thanks for that confirmation. So that was what I was trying to find out, whether to be an Arahant, right, in a way is considered not as great as...
No need to compare. It's already enlightenment. Well, you have no more avijja if you can realize that.
Right. So because I'm still seeking.
No problem.
That's why I ask, do we really have to? I mean, I laugh because I was laughing at myself for asking that question.
The other thing I must let you understand is the morning chanting, when we chant, were you around?
I was at a temple, at a shrine.
Never mind. Tomorrow you try to be early. We will go through the morning chanting again. The Buddha again recite the five aggregates. Rupang anicchang, rupang anatta. Then he continue. Vedana anicchang anatta. Sanya anicchang anatta. Sankara anicchang anatta. Then vinyanang anicchang anatta. Then he summarized. Sabbe sankara anicchang, sabbe sankara dukkhang, sabbe dhamma anatta. That is the five aggregates. He tell the monk every day you must recite, remind yourself. These five aggregates are impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity. Therefore, it is empty, anatta, non-self. So this teaching is in the Theravada tradition, not only Mahayana tradition. That's why I say it shows the similarity between the Sakyamuni Buddha's Mahayana tradition's teaching of the five aggregates and the Heart Sutta teaching of the five aggregates. They are the same five aggregates. And this five aggregates is very basic. Like I explained to you, is it hard for you to understand as a human being? You have a physical body? Not difficult, right? You have a mind, subdivide into four more aggregates. Is it difficult to understand? Just ask yourself, what can your mind do? It can feel, it can perceive, it can arise sankhara, mental state, then you can become conscious. Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. Is that difficult to understand? That one is very basic. As a human being, you know you are that, isn't it? Then the second aspect may be not so easy for you. But the only difference is the second aspect, the mind, has four aggregate, no form aggregate. Then how did the form enter the thought, the mind? is through your perception. Well, whatever you perceive outside are the external form. That one is 1 hour only. The next session one we switch is supposed to be 2 hours. Never mind. Okay, just leave it. So what you need to understand is the external form that you perceive through your senses, the moment you perceive, you bring the external form into the mind, understand? Like this Buddha Rupang at the back. How do you know it's a Buddha Rupang? You perceive it, isn't it? Can follow or not?
Okay.
And this is the external form, isn't it? Because you perceive it through the mental, this form enters the mental. That's why that thought has the external form, which is through perception. Anyway, and four original aggregate plus the external form become the five aggregate. This is the second aspect. So to me, it's not difficult, not abstract. Very easy to understand. Then you can put to test all the teaching. You attach to any of this, find out for yourself whether you suffer or not.
There's a lot of questions in my head as you're talking.
Never mind,
ask one question. When you say put to a test, what do you mean by that?
What is it?
Put to a test. You say put to a test.
Put to a test, you don't know. The Buddha said, in short, the final summary is, due to your sakayadity, you grasp and cling at the five aggregate of form and mind, and that is the cause of suffering. If you don't know what is this five aggregate, how to put to test? If you attach to a physical body, which is one of the aggregate, do you suffer? You already know that. You worry about it getting sick, getting old and die, you suffer. If you attach to the feeling aggregate, do you suffer? You want good feeling, you don't want bad feeling. And feeling is impermanent, dependent originating. Like the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, you will suffer. That's why all this you can put to test. Whatever you perceive, if you like and dislike, you suffer. Understand? But it's impermanent.
Of course, I mean, how shall I say? Brother Chiu, sometimes it's so difficult for me to say because I'm afraid
I know,
that being misunderstood.
You are new. You are new to this topic. You are very new. Don't worry, Sekhma. Because you are very new, so it is because there is some condition that arises maybe for you to break free from this. Otherwise, you will stuck there very long. Understand? If there is no condition, I won't even remember or recall or even touch on this topic. But because there is condition from this, that's why I bring it up again. You understand? So don't worry about right and wrong, whether we perceive you wrongly or whatever. Forget about that. Listen attentively. And like I say, listen. Whatever that can help you progress, take it. The rest, open mind. Understand? Just let it be. No right, no wrong. Can do that?
Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
No problem. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sui, you want to add something?
I don't know if this will help. Let me see. This is to share my form of investigation because it was also hard for me to understand how I can test all these theories that I'm hearing before I can understand what is being taught in the Buddha Dharma. So one of the parts that helped me understand the second aspect of form and mind, which is the thoughts that I have, was there was one occasion when I made a donation, and then I made a donation before I boarded a public transport on the bus. And then when I was on the bus, I was starting to doubt myself whether that was a fraud. And then by the time I got off at my house bus stop, I was feeling very bad. The brain started thinking that he might have used the money to do all kinds of bad things, and I might be encouraging the vices in society. All those thoughts. But then suddenly, at that point, I don't know why I started. One of the questions that came out is why this thought? Why not any other thought? Then I started to think, eh, if I thought that he is a good person and he really needed the money, whatever his reasons are, whether it's for himself or his family or whatever, or maybe whatever he did was selfish, but consequently he might have helped other people along the way. So little ripple will cause bigger ripples to happen. Then if I think that way, I'm not suffering so badly anymore. So I could see how my suffering was compounded by this second aspect of the fire gates of form and mind, which is all the thought. It's not a physical form, but it is all these pictures in my mind with all the dread and how the world can be worse because of what I did, and the feeling of disappointment and being let down is like, what if that person cheated me? All these things that arise from this process of deliberating inside my head actually just compounded the suffering that need not be there. So I got a glimpse of the first noble truth, trying to understand more of it by doing this kind of experiment. I hope
okay,
this
sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's rejoin. So this brings about another important point of Dhamma that I always advise Kayamita. Especially in the early days, I used to remind Brother Song, no amount of analysis, reasoning can solve your problem. But this is not wisdom. Analysis is the thought analyzed. Reasoning is the mundane mind reason to justify, to come up with solution. That's why what happened was Su Yi was doing the analysis. Ayo, I donate it. What if these people use it for what? Well, the reality is the world is the world. People are just the way they are. Conditioned, I think, whatever you have done, finish. Understand? No? Done already. What? Why you want to think about it? Why you want to worry about right and wrong? So analysis is for the mundane, deluded mind. So no amount of analysis can help develop the wisdom to give you wisdom. But when you do mathematical things, when you are working, you have to reason, you have to analyze, understand? When you do research, you have to use the thought process. Because that one is suitable. The thought process can be used for what we call mechanical memory that are very useful, that can actually work and develop understanding and bring about scientific progress or society's evolution in understanding the physical thing, the scientific aspect of nature's law. But when it comes to psychological memory, please don't analyze. Understand? Psychological means your emotion. That's why I say, what is wrong thought? When you analyze and the thought becomes wrong thought are thoughts that condition your emotion, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your unhappy. Like what Sui realized. The more he dwells into it, the more suffering arises. So awareness of this is attention. Is developing the understanding that no amount of analysis can help you. That's why Jaya Krishnamurti also say, don't analyze. He give you a very direct answer. Who analyze? Huh? The thought analyze. And the thought is limited, egoic. How can he give you wisdom? That's why the mundane thinking before you develop the enlightenment and the awakening, always analyze reason based on your views, opinion, conditioning, and beliefs, and you are what you are at that moment. But the moment you awaken, you become different. That's why the Dhamma is about wisdom. When you realize the wisdom via the direct seeing, the pure mind, the true mind, the awareness nature, that insight into phenomena and awaken, then that penetrative understanding awakens the individual. Then you see clearly, no point analyzing. Understand? Analyze for what? You want to be right? That does not help you. Understand? Right and wrong sometimes can bring about more misunderstanding and conflict if you are not careful. So don't try to be right. So in a lot of occasions, if you don't try to be right, then you are okay, understand? But if you try to be right, means what? Who is trying? The thought is trying. The ego is very strong. That's why it wants to reason. It wants to argue. It wants to counter. So all this will bring about unnecessary misunderstanding and agitation within the mundane mind. But once you have the clarity, then you look at the situation. If there is condition to help somebody, if there is condition for them to understand, then you will say something. But after a while, if no more condition, it ceases to be. Understand? So if it's not because this fire aggregate appear again like that, I will not bring it up. So luckily now, Seng Hua also understand. Yeah? She already expressed how she feels and what is the reason behind. So no problem. Yeah? So we rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah.
Sorry, this is my nature, I think.
No problem.
I think when we analyze, I mean for me.
It's okay.
Because I don't go beyond thought, right?
Yeah.
I'm stuck at here. And
Correct.
So, for me, I feel when I analyze things to understand better. It's never to say that I'm better or you are wrong. No.
You only need to learn.
I just want to know more.
Seng Hua, you only need to know one more thing to understand why analysis is limited. Who analyzes? Remember that. The thought analyzes. And the thought that is not enlightened has ego, has sakyadity. Because of that, your direction of analysis is based on your views, opinion, conditioning, belief system, and everything that you have accumulated as knowledge. Understand? And this is not wisdom. This one includes your psychological phobia, fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity. Of course, you have your happy moments too. Understand? The good memory. And all this is what we call the bundle of memory that is the whole conditioning that human being developed from birth until now. So unless you can break free from memory to develop the wisdom to act, acting according to memory is not acting at all. But most human beings are trapped in memory. So don't worry, you are not alone. There are plenty like you. So this is the understanding that cultivator must break free. So when you see, like Krishnamurti say, clearly that memory is what that condition you into a entity that you believe you exist and you are a permanent unchanging entity, therefore you can own thing, have thing, possess thing, then that is sakyadity. That's how suffering comes to be. And the Buddha's teaching is just telling you that. Then whether you realize it or you don't realize it, depend on your ability to be sensitive, to feel them. When you have sti, you can feel them. Then you know, like Sui come to know, agitating. Understand? The more she analyzes, no answer. Then when she decide to let it be, whatever that person is, nothing to do with me, you know, his karma or her karma. What she has done, finish. Donate means donate. That's it. And then the whole analysis is unnecessary. Gone. Then the world becomes the world again. Can see that?
Thanks, Prasad. Question. You mentioned about mundane thinking collapse, something like that.
Mundane thinking is useful. Like I said, mechanical memory to do your work. To understand mechanical things, nothing to do with psychology. Understand? Like where you stay, who are your parents, your friend, your bank signature. That's why mechanical memory, you must remember. Understand? Then, to analyze a scientific problem or mathematical problem, you have to use memory. Understand? That one is very useful, very conducive. That's why the scientific law, Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama, mechanical memory is very useful for study, etc. But when it comes to psychological emotion that entangle with karma, you cannot use memory. If you use memory, you get into big trouble. Because that thing, the thought that arises from the memory is egoic. And that one cannot understand psychological thing. There is no wisdom. You cannot free. You may have some form of knowledge to free, like what the psychiatrists and all those people apply. They try to talk to you, then they try to give you what they call medical, what you call those medicine. Tranquilizer and all those, they call what that, the, your hormone deficiency. When you have panic attack or phobia, they know certain chemical imbalance. The word is chemical imbalance. They will give you the drug that stabilize your chemical imbalance. And then your emotion actually become more stable. But that become a drug, understand? You become addicted to it. Then you need stronger doses and all those things. So that one is, they use what they call analysis and logical thinking, the thought process, to help the patient to recover. And by giving them all this medical tranquilizer and chemical imbalance type of pill to help them stabilize their emotion. But it's not a foolproof solution, understand? It does not root out the problem completely. It only helps for the moment, temporary solution. Whereas if you understand it through the Dhamma way, which a lot of depressed people came to me, I explained to them, they developed the understanding, and after that, they dropped the medicine. Like Alicia, 16 years in depression, very severe, until gastric ulcer, like cannot live life. It's like hell, life was hell. After coming to Tuesday class, developed the understanding, within a few months, she recovered. Then within, I think, 1 or 2 years, she can drop the medicine. And now, no need medicine. She become normal again. Health, everything recovered. And she become beautiful, bubbly. No need to analyze anymore. Well, last time the thought, keep on analyzing. Why these people are that? Why they don't want to allow me to do this and do that? And all directed at their own brother, sister, and in-law, and all those things, just family issue. Then the thought very negative, cannot see. But when the Dhamma is being explained, then she start to see, you know, that these are evil root, the root of all evil that torment her, you know, and cause suffering in her. Then she decided to straighten her view and think of right thought instead of wrong thought. Then when he come out of it, she still can recall and tell her. The moment he see that thought telling her what to do, the habitual tendency, and now you have tormented me for 16 years, immediately it subsides. You know? Like ask her to think negatively and react to all those things. Immediately with the Dhamma wisdom, the Unisok Manasikara spontaneously prompt her and the whole thing subsides. It cannot arise anymore. So that is how psychological memory can be rooted out, your habitual tendency. And that one nothing to do with technical, mechanical thing. See the difference, not easy. You will be very confused if you try to understand. But let things be, take time for it to evolve. Okay, Sekwa?
Sure. No, Brother Chu, the question I wanted to ask just now was, when you said your mundane, if my the terms are correct, your mundane thinking, is it? Collapse. Does that equate to arahant?
What you mean? Yours or mine?
Yours.
That is interesting. Somebody who don't have the understanding want to know.
Sorry, forgive me.
No problem, no problem. What is your question again? You want to know, what does I mean when I say my Monday mind collapse? So you think I don't have mind? You think I don't have mind after that?
No, I didn't went that.
No, after my Monday mind collapse, I don't have the Monday mind.
But understanding your explanation just now, obviously.
Never mind. You ask your actual question.
Obviously you would have, because you would still remember your bank account and stuff like that.
It's not to say I have. The Monday mind really no more. The thing that clouded me, the gross vibration type of Monday mind, the whole thing collapsed in front of me like a layer of consciousness. Zoop, gone. You gone. Then there is nothing, like no clarity. That awareness nature shines forth. And this becomes the supramundane mind. I have that mind, like what Hui Ning have.
Okay. Remember,
don't try to understand.
My path, although I say friendship is my path, but honestly, I don't know.
Oh, Arahan, the mundane mind don't collapse.
Don't collapse.
Don't collapse. That's why you read the Mahayana Sutta, they say their enlightenment and the segmented life, birth and death. Means every segment you come and take rebirth, that one no more. We are no more avijja. But they have not stopped the outflow of thought. Understand? Their mundane thought still arise and pass away. So that one, they use the word Mahayana, hayu, low, is still linked. Understand not? That one, the birth and death of the thought, the mundane thinking, they haven't ceased. That's why they say that type of nirvana is like a conjured city, not the real one. But that is what the Mahayana described. So don't try to know all this. This one cannot be understood until you transform. Okay?
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No problem. Sui, you got something to add? Yeah.
Yeah, the last tip about experimenting with the thought is whenever we are uncomfortable, I will use the word uncomfortable, not angry or it hasn't even gone to all the negative mindset, but whenever we are uncomfortable, the wrong thoughts are there. This was there. Very good for me to investigate.
Yes.
It was a very good experiment. Because many times, it's just a little uncomfortable or frustrated with what's going on.
Yeah.
Then I start to think, huh? I have having a wrong
thought. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What
then
is wrong
trace.
About this?
You trace. From there, you trace.
I found
that
useful.
That was the advice I give to all Karimita and my children. Whatever happened, don't get angry. Don't react, don't stir. Then, whenever you are unhappy or slight, like lack of peace and unhappy, means the wrong thought is there. Otherwise, you won't be like that one. Understand? Not? Means something bothering you. Understand? Not? You have been using your mundane thinking to analyze, and that analysis has triggered off agitation inside you. Like Sui said, you haven't become angry yet, but you know, through that understanding of that statement, he can sense that she is not peaceful, not happy. And like, not angry yet, a bit of bosong, frustration is a stronger word, but bosong, like bosong, how to translate in English? Uncomfortable, correct, that is the right word, uncomfortable. When you feel yourself not peaceful, uncomfortable, then the evil roots are there. That is a very good understanding. That's why a lot of Karimita learn that, and my daughter also learn that, and my son also learn that. I warn him, and he really practices it. I say, whatever happens, don't get angry and don't react. Accept the reality, have clarity of mind, then contemplate, reflect, then resolve it amicably. Finish. Yeah. Don't stir your mind, react, and become emotional. Because the evil roots will arise. Then you become evil, root of all evil. So all this will multiply. Yeah. And this is how the mundane mind proliferates and becomes heedless and lost its ability to have clarity and understanding, to be sensitive. That's why you lost your mindfulness, you become heedless. And this thinking continues to project into the future. Recall your unhappy past or phobia or memory. Then all this is what wrong thought is all about. So the Buddha taught us the four right effort. When wrong thought arises, what must you do? Right effort to? Abandon the first right thought. Then after that, you develop the understanding. Then you can have the second right effort to prevent it from arising. To prevent it from arising is a wisdom. Understand? You think so easy to prevent your anger, your fear from arising. Not easy. Where they are dependent originating due to your conditioning, your belief system, your habitual thinking, your habitual reaction. And when you see all this, like what Krishnamurti says, self-knowledge, observe yourself. Without reaction, no. You observe, choiceless awareness. Don't try to interfere. Don't try to change anything. Observe self-knowledge. Then you come to understand how you stir your mind, how you get angry, how you develop fear, how you become emotional, how cunningness arises in you. All these are your mundane manifestation through your evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then when you see that, that is the cause of negative karma. That is the cause of suffering. Then you wake up. Then you undertake the training rule to abstain from killing, causing harm to fellow beings, lying, deceiving, cheating, sexual misconduct, taking intoxicants. All this become automatic. You cannot do it. Your life, you have to decide. To be happy or to be miserable is entirely your choice. So you want to follow Dhammapada verse 1, become heedless, then act, speak, and think with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then suffering will follow you. Up to you. If you choose to be happy, follow Dhammapada verse 2. You choose to be heedful so that you act, speak, and think with a free mind, a wholesome mind, that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, so that happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves. So all this understanding, when you contemplate, reflect, and develop the understanding, you will straighten your view and never go back to the old heedless way of living. You will determine to cultivate and develop the understanding to bring forth Dhammapada was for heedful living, so that you can take care of karma, bring forth the wisdom and understanding to understand life, to live life, and to transcend birth and death. So all this is what the teaching can provide and enable living beings to awaken. Okay? Yeah. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah.
One more part that wasn't clear about what we shared just now is that when we believe that wrong thought, no matter how small, it is actually the grasping of the second aspect of form and mind. And that itself is suffering is being taught in the Dhamma, the First Noble Truth.
Very good, very good. Sadhu, sadhu. Let us rejoice. The second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, now you see clearly like what Sui said. When you grasp to any of the aggregate, you know Sankara include your views, opinion, and conditioning, and belief system, you know. No? You grasp to that, you suffer, understand? No? You become rigid, you want to argue. You want to like bosong and all those things. But this is what your aggregates of Sankara is, including your feeling and perception, the content of consciousness. That is what you are before you become enlightened. Understand? Your conditioning, your belief system, your whatever accumulated experiences, good and bad, that whole bundle of memory is what you are. That's why when people have severe accident, then they got brain damage, sometimes they lost memory of what they are. and they lose certain function that they used to be able to perform, because that part of the memory that is driving all those actions, speech and thought process has been affected. Yeah. Then sometimes they don't recall who they are. They are damaged, that part of the memory. So a lot of this thing has to do with your brain and memory. But you rely on that to live life, to understand life. But when you have the awareness nature, this awareness nature is independent from memory. This one can see what is happening up here and the interaction. But that one cannot understand this one. That's the nature inside. And this nature inside unborn, undying. That's why it never dies. That's why when the form and mind separate, that nature can come out. Understand? But it's not a being. Eventually it will cease. What will come out is the random of consciousness that remain inside at the moment of death. When the three supporting conditions that support this no more, like your life force no more, or your vital organ destroyed, but the consciousness is still inside, isn't it? That one will come out, understand? But that one is not you anymore, not a permanent unchanging entity anymore. It's just a bundle of memory with its conditioning that remain. Beyond the rebirth consciousness, if you have avijja, already gone. But the enlightened being, they don't die like that, understand? They die with clarity, no avijja. They don't have rebirth consciousness. And they can make use of this random of consciousness to do investigation if they want to. And they know clearly that this is the vehicle and the tool, not them. So all this understanding is there. So when you really want to understand the what they call beauty of this teaching of the Buddha, you can really go into it and develop a lot of understanding. Okay? So we better end, otherwise we cannot finish. Okay, Manyan, continue. Yeah.
The introduction by Master Xuanhua also explained how wonderful and full of wisdom this sutra is, and also why it is so important to read through this sutra diligently many times before each repetition will reveal to the reader a new depth or a new level of understanding, thus bringing about immeasurable benefits. In a book 10 times its length, one could not fully praise its value as a key to the understanding of human life. Hence the famous saying, true happiness is wonderful existence, i.e., understanding true emptiness can lead to deep understanding of human life. Hence, life or existence will become very meaningful and very wonderful once this Heart Sutra wisdom has been developed. Master Xuanhua also stressed on the importance of having real spiritual understanding rather than deep learning or knowledge-based understanding. Only as a true prerequisite for expounding this Heart Sutra. The main concern of the Heart Sutra and all the other sutras that the Buddha has spoken is simply to understand deeply the birth, life and death of living beings. Answering questions like, why must we avoid all evil, do good and purify our mind? Why are we born and where will we go when we die? What we must do while here, how we can stop our suffering and find true happiness for ourselves and others. What is death? What dies and who dies? Who are you and what are you? What is life? How to understand its meaning and purpose? 1.2. Why must we also study the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutra? Question 2. Why must we also study the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutra? Brother Theo, as the Heart Sutra teaching is so profound, because it is beyond thought, beyond mind, and beyond the conditioned world, hence we need to understand the Six Patriarchs Platform Sutra, especially so the two famous poems as written by Sun Siu and Hui Neng. Only then can we develop the understanding to go beyond mind to understand the Heart Sutra, which is so abstract with sayings like form is emptiness and emptiness is form, and therefore in true emptiness there is no form, feeling, etc. No eyes, ears, no sight, sound, no feel of eyes up to and including no feel of mind consciousness, no ignorance or ending of ignorance up to and including no old age, sickness and death or ending of it, and no Four Noble Truths and no understanding and no attaining, etc. 1.3 Six Patriarchs Platform Sutra. Based on this poem then, Sun Siu has yet to realize the true mind, hence his inability to comprehend the higher Dharma as realized by Hui Neng. The reason being he is using the mundane mind to cultivate, hence the delusion. In my second and this third Heart Sutra classes recap, I delve in more detail into Hui Neng's Platform Sutra, and I also taught you how to see form, the unreality of form, its condition arising or impermanence nature, and its non-self and empty nature, so as to enable you to develop the wisdom to finally see beyond form. This is then followed by the same understanding that all the other form, four aggregates of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara and Vinaya, are also impermanent, causes suffering and are empty. Only then can you start to develop the understanding of why form is emptiness and emptiness is form. 1.4 Mundane mind with and without spiritual understanding. We can be very successful in life, both financially and career-wise. Both are mundane aspects of life. But without the spiritual understanding, we are still vulnerable and many things can still afflict us, especially so the First Noble Truth's eight conditions, which are also the realities of life and existence. This is the reason why the Buddha renounced the world once he saw the four signs of an old man, a very sick man, a dead man, and a sammana or a renounced holy man in robe. The then Buddha-to-be realized that he had a problem with regards to old age, sickness and death. Hence, he seeks the spiritual understanding to gain the wisdom to free himself from these problems. He then developed the spiritual understanding and became a Sammasambuddha underneath the Bodhi tree. Without the true spiritual understanding or wisdom, one cannot be free from all suffering because one can still have fear, worry and anxiety, etc. While one's own self-delusion, which will condition one to cling onto and grasp at one's five aggregates of form and mind. Hence, one should realize the importance of cultivating the spiritual understanding while meditation as taught by the Buddha, to enable one to live the noble life of love, peace, joy and harmony. Only then can there be no fear, worries, anxieties, unhappiness and suffering, etc. The spiritual understanding will lead to non-delusion and wisdom, enabling one to clearly understand who you are, what you are and how human beings function, and eventually leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. 1.5 Essential Understanding. In the recap, Brother Teo emphasized the following. Number 1. The importance of understanding Dhammapada verses 1, 2, 183, 21, 22 and 23, and the final advice of the Buddha before his parinibbana. Once one comprehends these verses, one will understand the importance of training the mind to be heedful and ever mindful and ever mindful. One will like wake up from their deluded dream state while seeing the danger of heedlessness, and one will then be very serious about life to develop the cultivation. 2. The danger of letting these three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, which are the roots of all evil, from manifesting in our heart. Number 3. The importance of arising the four right efforts to root out the three evil roots and the five mental hindrances. Number 4. the importance of cultivating the five spiritual faculties to overcome the five mental hindrances of the mind. Notes. Number one, under Kaya Nupassana, there is a category of cultivation called Sati Sampajana, mindfulness and the four types of clear comprehension of every action and movement in the present moment. This is the most important cultivation. It can help stabilize one's sati or mindfulness via the daily mindfulness cultivation. Hence, this is the reason why Brother Theo always says, life itself is the real meditation and life is our true teacher. Number two, the four types of clear comprehensions are clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose, clear comprehension of domains of meditation, clear comprehension of suitability, and clear comprehension of non-delusion. Number three, domains of meditation means one can meditate in any posture, everywhere, anywhere, any place, and any time under any circumstances. Number four, anything external form that is created by the mind via perception is only a mental image. It comes and it goes, hence it is impermanent, not so real and empty. To cling onto it is obviously a delusion. Form is never a problem if we know how to develop the mind to understand it, so that we are not deluded or deceived by it. Number five, cultivating the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha, leading to the three types of corresponding wisdom, called Sutta Maya Panya, Citta Maya Panya, and Bhavana Maya Panya, is very important. For details, please refer to Brother Theo's Dhamma notes on understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Part one recapitulation. Point one, emphasis on the previous lesson, emptiness. Number one, emptiness or sunatha in Pali is a term frequently used in Mahayana tradition versus the term non-self or anatta in Pali, which is the equivalent term that is frequently used in the Theravada tradition. Number two, importance of understanding why our physical form and all external forms can also be expressed as form is impermanent, brings about suffering when we deludedly cling into it without understanding, and is empty and anatta nature. To understand it clearly, we must have the ability to see its manifestation via mind's perception with clear mindfulness to recognize it as conditioned arising phenomena. Hence, it is not a permanent, unchanging entity that we can cling onto or hold onto as the I and the me, or own as the mind, thus seeing it as empty, sunatha, anatta, because it has no apparent reality. Also, a cultivator needs to develop the wisdom to understand why form is external manifestation of mind, via a clear and stable daily mindfulness cultivation. Number three, form delusion can be very powerful. Hence, if you can't see form, you can't see mind, because form is much grosser, whereas mind is very subtle. However, with wisdom born of the direct seeing, form and mind delusion will cease to be, leading to enlightenment in the here and the now. Number four, definition of samana. A samana is a renounced holy person in the robe seriously cultivating the Buddha Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. He or she is also usually referred to as one who is already enlightened. The term is used as opposed to the other term, Brahmins, who studied the Vedas during the time of Sakyamuni Buddha. To a samana, spiritual understanding is very important, because without spiritual understanding, one cannot be free. One cannot understand the problems and realities of life and existence. There is a recently printed Dharma book for free distribution by Wave, and the title of the book is Samana, on the life of the late Luangta Mahabowa. Our Kalamita Fund has also donated towards its printing for free distribution. Hence, we were given some copies of these books for free distribution by WAVE, and everyone who is interested in having a copy can request it from Brother Teo. 1.2 Essential Understanding. In the recap, Brother Teo re-emphasized on the following important Dharma. Number 1. The importance of understanding true emptiness is wonderful existence, leading to our ability to live life meaningfully and to the fullest. Number 2. True blessing comes from your own cultivation via karmic inheritance and nothing else, i.e. not due to your luck, feng shui, etc. Number 3. The importance of cultivating a very stable sati or mindfulness leading to heedfulness or apamada throughout the day. Number 4. Importance of repentance and asking for forgiveness sincerely. When you forgive someone, you actually free yourself from the evil roots of anger, hatred, and delusion. Part 2, Heart Sutra Lesson 4. 2.1. Master Seong Hua's very unique birth and life history. On Guanyin Bodhisattva's birthday, the master dreamed that an old woman wearing a patchwork rope and a string of beads appeared to guide him. This unique birth and life history of Master Seong Hua provided the conditions for Brother Teo to also share a bit of his unique spiritual affinities and encounters with Guanyin Bodhisattva in his early years of cultivation, 1986. And the details are as described by him during the sharing on that day. For details, please refer to the web link or 16GB USB that contains the recording as produced by Brother Sui An. In 1986, Brother Teo and his whole family took refuge under Master Seong Hua, and apart from taking the five precepts, the other condition is to finish the 10,000 vows of reciting homage to thee, my original teacher, Namo Sakyamuni Buddha, within 3 months. Brother Teo completed it within less than 2 months. According to Brother Teo, this bowing, if done mindfully and with very strong sadha or faith and viriya or the spiritual zeal, one can lead one to a very stable daily mindfulness very quickly. 2.2. Is bowing another technique to develop heedfulness? Question 1. Is bowing another technique to develop mindfulness that is similar to walking and sitting meditation? The understanding of it is very important. There is not much meaning to your cultivation if you just follow instructions without understanding. You must understand why you bow and what you are doing in the name of meditation, i.e. do not just follow the instructions to do certain things via any method or technique, etc., thinking that when you are doing all that, then you are meditating. The real meditation as taught by the Buddha cannot begin unless one has developed the training of the mind to be heedful with sati or mindfulness within. The various objects of meditation used in conjunction with the various methods and techniques of meditation are only initial skillful means used to train the mind, so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought most of the time. The main purpose of the object of meditation is to anchor the mind to it so that one is always in the moment, mindful and aware of the object of meditation without thought. Once this training is done, the trained mind will be silent without thought, with awareness within, and such a mind is in the meditative state to see things as they are, without any concepts, ideas, or words. When the above is understood, then any method or technique can also be used to train the mind to be heedful initially. But finally, we need to develop the ultimate meditative mind with silent inner awareness, where the mind must have no dwelling as per the Diamond Sutra. Then, one must let go of the meditation object and silence one's mind to develop the more refined mindfulness within. It is just like swimming. The float is just like an initial skillful means, object of meditation, to help keep one afloat. And as long as one still holds onto the float, then one will never understand the actual swimming, because to swim with the float and without the float are two totally different experiences. Bowing or reverential salutation is one of the 10 meritorious actions, and it is a very important virtue that comes with so many benefits and advantages. It is part of the opening and closing puja or devotional practices as recommended by the Buddha to help one establish the faith or sadha in the Buddha and his teaching, followed by the spiritual zeal or viriya and the development of sati or mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty. One can then bow mindfully and with understanding via a composed mind with strong sadha and viriya. Bowing is not idol worshipping, but instead it is reverential salutation done out of great respect and gratitude for someone who has taught us so well, like the Buddha, who is fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtues. Since it is a meritorious action, the field of merits is immeasurable if it is done with understanding to the worthy or enlightened ones. Such merits can be made use of to arise the causes and conditions for us to progress quickly along the path of Dharma while evoking the power of merits. Apart from helping us to develop the spiritual faculties of sadha, viriya, and sati, bowing can also help us to cultivate humility and help exercise our body while establishing ourselves in mindfulness training. Also, according to the Buddha, four things grow if we pay respect sincerely to our elders and worthy ones. The four things are Ayu, Wano, Sukham, and Balam. Their meaning are Ayu, long life, Wano, fair complexion, Sukham, happiness, and Balam, a strength, both spiritual and physical. All these four blessings are very important for having the good life. 2.3. Can you show us how to do the bowing? Question 2. Can you show us how to do the bowing? Is it the Theravada tradition's five-point prostration or the Mahayana's way of standing up, then going down to prostrate and come up again? Brother Theo answered, whichever way that suits you more, use it. The most important thing is when you bow, do it mindfully with very strong faith and viriya, and do it with proper understanding. Always remember, one can only do one thing at a time. That is, either you are mindful with the moment in silent awareness without thought, or you are lost in thought, hence heedless. Bowing mindfully means body and mind move as one in harmony without thought. When the mind is composed and without the five hindrances of mind, mindfulness will be there naturally. So develop the faith, compose the mind, then chant the salutation to Sakyamuni Buddha, and then bow mindfully to develop the sati or mindfulness within. After a while, if you are sincere, patient, and doing it with understanding, then it can bring about the conditions for sati or mindfulness to arise. Mindfulness arises through understanding and perseverance, and when mindfulness is firmly established, there will be so much joy. The mind is so silent, so light, so composed, so still, yet fully aware within throughout the day. In every movement and every action, there is so much clarity and awareness within the heart. It then starts to see things as they are, and direct knowledge and version of the reality keep on arising. Things that are there all this while, its three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, etc., which the normal living beings never see, suddenly become very clear. This is the reason why Brother Dio always said to us, truth is everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. 2.4. The three great Buddhist traditions. Are they all the same or are they different? Question 3. Are the teachings of the three great Buddhist traditions of Theravada, Mahayana, and Vajrayana all the same or are they different? Brother Teo answered, the essence of the Buddha's teachings, like the Four Noble Truths, which includes the Noble Eightfold Path, are essentially all the same for all the three traditions. It is only how they approach it that makes it appear to be very different, because of different commentaries and interpretations of suttas, wire words and terminologies used, and all these complicate the matter further as words are subjected to various interpretations. What is more important is not to argue and create any unnecessary and unhealthy divisions and misunderstanding within the various traditions, because instead to have an open mind and avoid all negative apps, Make use of whatever that is relevant, useful and suitable for each of us to progress along the path of Dharma while following the Buddha's advice to the Kalama as stated in the Kalama Sutta. Harmony, love and understanding following the Noble Eightfold Path to resolve all issues amicably is very important, i.e. no more negativity. 2.5. Difference between Pure Land, Western Paradise and Nibbana. Question 4. Can you explain the difference between the Pure Land teaching that talks about the Western Paradise and Nibbana as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha? Brother Dio answered, Pure Land teaching is based on Amitabha Buddha's great vows, which created the Pure Land, also called the Western Paradise. For those disciples or cultivators who have the affinity with him to continue with their cultivation and perfection. By virtue of Amitabha Buddha and all the other great bodhisattvas like Guanyin, Manjushri, etc., great cultivation, their vows are very powerful because of their wisdom and perfections. Hence, this leads to their great vows to be integrated into nature's law, thereby enabling their vows to have such special ability to create such pure land and manifest naturally, thus helping the cultivators and their disciples who know how to connect directly to their vows without themselves having to be there or at any specific place to help. This pure land or the Western Paradise is in the hearts of those who have developed the cultivation and have the ability to connect directly to Amitabha Buddha's vows via their silent mind with very strong faith while chanting Amitabha Buddha's name or his mantra. Chant until no one is chanting, i.e. the vibration and the mind has become one in perfect harmony and synchrony. This pure land or the Western Paradise is not within the 31st planes of existence as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha. 2.6. What are these 31 planes of existence? Question 5. What are these 31 planes of existence? Brother Diot answered, according to Theravada tradition, the 31 planes of existence are the realms of existence within samsara, or existence where living beings have to undergo birth and death following their karma. It can also be called the three worlds. Number 1, the formless world or Arupa Loka. Four formless realms of neither perception nor non-perception, nothingness, infinite consciousness or infinite space. Number 2, the form world or Rupa Loka, 16 Brahma realms. Number 3, the sensual world or Kama Loka. 6 Deva or heavenly realms plus 1 human realms plus 2 woeful states or suffering realms. The sensual realms are further divided into 1. Suffering world of the sensual realms or Kama Dukkati, and they are the 4 woeful realms of demons, animals, betas or hungry ghosts and the hell beings. 2. Kama Sukkati or the sensual realms of happiness are the human realm and the 6 deva realms. The Mahayana call it the 6 realms of birth and death, with the 1 human realm plus 4 woeful realms remaining exactly the same, and the only difference is the Mahayana has only 1 heavenly realm to define all the 6 deva realms plus the 16 Brahma realms and the 4 formless realms. Hence 1 plus 4 plus 6 plus 16 plus 4 equals to 31 realms or planes of existence. Note, no thought ever mindful and constantly meditative imply ever mindful to constantly cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path equals to heedfulness. Dhammapada verse 23.
Okay, thank you. Exactly 11 o'clock, we stop here. So we're supposed to have our meditation after that. But just now we flip the thing. So after 2 hours of sharing, we will have 1 hour of meditation. So we will start our meditation now, 11 o'clock. Maybe you do it until... Until 12 o'clock. So minimum 45 minutes of formal meditation. You can either do the walking, lying down, or bowing. Then for 15 minutes, you can do your contemplation. So your contemplation can be anywhere. Within this meditation hall also can, or at the corridor, or you can go down if you want to. Those who want to go for toilet break, you can go. Then after that, we will off the light so that you can start your 45 minutes of formal meditation, followed by 15 minutes of contemplative meditation.